From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio, focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob.
It's me. Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. And we are pleased and honored to have Kathy Connor join us in person in studio. Kathy is the Chancellor of the Diocese of Sacramento. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
You're not a frequent visitor to the radio because you're so busy.
Yes, I'm up on that second floor, buried in work.
Indeed. And Kathy, we're all pleased for you, but it's one of those bittersweet moments. You, in a few months, you gave us fair warning.
Yes.
You're going to move on with your life.
I am. It is very bittersweet indeed. I have quite a bit of angst about it, but
yeah, I can imagine.
The decision has been made. I have a husband that's been retired for a few years, mm-hmm. and I have 10 little grandchildren.
Oh my goodness.
The oldest is 9 and the youngest is 2, and wow. I am so lucky that they all live in very close proximity to me.
That's a real gift.
It is. Yeah. It is. It is. So it is time that I took on a bigger role as a grandmother. So.
Well, that's wonderful stuff.
It is good
and,
stuff.
I remember my mom had this saying on her wall that grandchildren are God's gift, you know, and I know when my son, my oldest son, gave me our first grandchild. It's like, I'm not old enough to be a grandpa, even though I easily was, you know?
Yeah.
But it was like, wow, what a different feeling from, it was something that overwhelmed me that I didn't expect.
Yeah, it is. I remember my mother saying, oh, just wait, they're the best.
Yeah.
And I didn't really understand that. But I think as grandparents, we're relieved of the burden of, you know, the day in, day out, taking care of little ones, and we just get to have them, and it's all about them.
And it's all about them.
It is. And it's very special, and I think we have a very special role to play in their lives as well.
No question. And, you kind of go back in history, and we hear about the breakdown of the family, and grandparents were such a huge part of extended families in so many cases.
They were,
generally lived in the same towns and frequently were helping literally raise the kids.
Right.
And, but whether that's the case or not, the fondness that children tend to have for their grandma or their grandpa is just, it's another gift from God.
It is. It's great. The little knock at the door and you open the door and they just run in and throw themselves at you. So it's great.
And the other thing that I'm sure you know and I've learned as a grandparent, you're not allowed to say no.
Well, you get to spoil them, and their parents just look at you and roll their eyes.
I know.
But that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay. So it's all good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. I remember my mom was the softy, you know.
Aww.
She was the one they'd all run to, bless her soul, you know. And the hard part, I think, for grandkids is when a grandparent passes on, you know, and they just don't understand.
Right.
You know, it's a tough, tough thing. So you have been chancellor for how many years now?
Nine years. 9 years. I hit my anniversary May 16th.
Wow.
So, moving into the 10th year. So. Wow.
So what were you doing before you were named chancellor?
Well, I actually was right in this building at the Pastoral Center down on the first floor.
Right.
And I oversaw the Department of Evangelization and Catechesis. Mm-hmm. And prior to that, I'd been executive director of the Sacramento Life Center.
Right.
And worked for the old Spaghetti Factory restaurants in another life. And
mm-hmm.
so, yeah.
I just ate in an old Spaghetti Factory down in Stockton.
Oh, good.
UOP with my daughter for a one-day writer's conference where I was speaking, and we were coming back home, and it was lunchtime, and I said, try to find a restaurant, you know. And she said, well, there's an old spaghetti factory here. She'd never been to one. And I said, oh, those are fun places. And so we had lunch there.
Good, yeah. Good. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And they were started by a Sacramentan. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. The family
I think they were in Portland initially or something.
The
like
headquarters
that.
Yeah. is in Portland, yeah. Right. I think, yes, yes.
Yeah. So,
well, yeah.
Anyway, so how did you transition from that, from being in the corporate world to what brought you to...
Yeah, you know, I think the corporate world was really a good foundation for what was to come, but I had no idea at the time. Right. I just so much about management and people and good solid training was excellent. But there just came a point, especially I think it was the Life Center pulled on my heartstrings, and I thought, you know, nonprofits, wonderful causes, but they need the same skill
sure,
set
yeah.
of good management minded to grow the organization.
Right.
So I just felt like that's where God was leading me.
Yeah.
So moved over to that agency, and then the next tug on my heart was that wouldn't it be wonderful to work for the Catholic Church, where mm-hmm. unabashedly I'm Catholic, this is who I am, this is what I do. And so then the transition to the pastoral center occurred.
Wow.
So
from the old spaghetti factory, do you miss the Spumoni ice cream?
I miss the Mazithra cheese.
But I was just going to say that. Yeah. I years ago, the first time I ever went, my brother said, you've got to have the pasta with the spaghetti with the Mazithra cheese.
Yes.
And I'm going, what is that? I've never heard of that. And I was just like, that's crazy stuff.
It's really good.
Yeah.
Yes.
Talk about gifts from God.
There
oh,
you go.
Yeah.
There you go. So
yeah.
I crave that at times.
Yeah.
I have to go get my fix.
Your
yes.
fix. Indeed.
Yes.
Indeed.
Yes.
Yeah. So, was becoming chancellor, a number of chancellors are clergy.
Yes.
Is your position, it's not unique, but is it unusual in the church in diocese that the chancellor is a layperson?
Well, you know, canon law doesn't change very often, but many years ago, canon law required that a chancellor was a clergy uh-huh. person. And that changed, and with that, then the possibility that a layperson could take mm-hmm. Take on that position. But that's very dependent on who the bishop is
sure.
and what his desire is. So there are still bishops that really do prefer a clergy person
right.
to take on that role. But in the case of Bishop Soto, he's very open to the possibility of a lay person coming and assuming that role.
Who did you replace?
I replaced at the time Father Mark Richards
uh-huh.
was the acting chancellor.
Right.
Yes. And I think prior to that was Sister Eileen Enright.
I think Sister Eileen was, yeah.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, I reported to Sister Eileen.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
So, when was this an opening that, when you became chancellor, was this a tap on the shoulder? Or was it?
No taps. No
yeah.
taps. Bishop Soto then got installed as the ordinary, and he had to put his team together
uh-huh.
upstairs, and so he selected someone to be his vicar for clergy
mm-hmm.
and a number of positions, but the chancellor position, he wanted the net cast and a formal recruitment and hiring process
right.
to start. And I almost didn't apply because mm-hmm. I thought, gee, if he had wanted me, he could have tapped
uh-huh,
me on the
uh-huh.
shoulder, but there was no
sure,
tap. But
sure.
anyway, I thought about it and thought, gee, I think I could do this.
Mm-hmm.
So I threw my name in the hat and went through the little bit of a gruesome process. And the next thing I knew, Bishop asked me to come into his office, and he offered me the job.
Wow.
So
wow.
that was a day.
My goodness.
That was a day.
So... is there a 25 words or less job description of who is somebody says you meet somebody somewhere and they say, what do you do? And you say, well, I'm the chancellor of the Diocese of Sacramento. And they say, what's that?
Well, in this diocese, and it does vary from diocese to diocese, there's one consistent piece that's the same because of canon law. And that's, in a way, you're a church notary.
Mm-hmm.
So you authenticate by a signature under your bishops of any assignments that are made or changes. Mm-hmm. But after that, it's a bishop's prerogative as to what else he wants the person to do. And, you know, actually, I can put it in three letters. He has this position as the COO, kind of the chief operating officer.
Right.
So the position oversees a number, supervises a number of department heads. That's a big part of the job. Serves on his core management team, kind of on his cabinet, and really kind of oversees the inner workings of the pastoral center.
Do you have other chancellors you can pick up the phone and say and talk shop with?
You know, I used to do that more at the beginning, I'm afraid, than I do now. I went and visited two of them in San Jose and in Oakland.
Lay people as well?
They both. One was a religious nun, and the other was a lay woman. So it was very helpful just to talk to them and see what parts of their job I would be having and how they did them. And they all had, you know, different pieces of advice for me. And it was very helpful. It was very helpful. Now so much I know who chancellors are, but I haven't had too much contact. In fact, the last one I had contact was in the Archdiocese of Baltimore, Maryland.
Oh, wow.
She had put a committee together that we were interested in, so I had a discussion with her about that.
So much church history in Baltimore.
There is.
Yeah.
There is.
So we should tell the listeners that there's not a new chancellor yet. This is not an inside job. This is one of the reasons we're talking with Kathy today is because the job is open and you're very much looking to cast a wide net.
That's right.
And there's no preconceived favorite candidate or anything like that. So if you are hear something that piques your interest, or if you know somebody you think might be a good candidate, the job is open.
It is. Bishop is accepting resumes through August 1st, and we have cast the net out pretty widely at some national organizations, our website, just a number of different ways to try and get it out.
Job description is on the website.
It is on the website. You can go to scd.org and look under employment, and it's the very first position. And there is, a two-page, fairly detailed job description. And Bishop is putting together a search committee, actually headed up by Colleen Branigan.
Yes.
He's asked Colleen to take that on.
Another former director of...
Yes, the Life Center. Yes. And she used to do lay personnel, I believe, up in another diocese in the state of Washington.
In Seattle, probably. Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah.
So she will be tasked to conduct interviews in the month of August with a group of people and make a recommendation, hopefully make a recommendation to Bishop Soto around the 1st of September as to who the top two candidates are.
And you're departing in October?
October 10th is my last day full time, and we planned a little vacation. I will come back the end of October, and I'll work 3 days a week for a period of time to assist with the transition. Yes.
Very good.
Yeah.
So I read the description online, and I said, this is daunting. There's only 7 days in a week. There are only 24 hours in a day.
Yeah.
It is a very obviously fulfilling job, but it's also a very filling job.
It is. So the probably the biggest requirement for the job is someone that has a lot of management experience. So you are getting the work of the church done through other people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's being able to manage that, you know, to meet with them, to provide support, some direction, so that they can then go back to their departments and continue the work. So probably the biggest skill set needed is someone that's very organized and has prior management experience.
So you're not only the CEO, you're the head coach, you're the, you know, you're deciding to who goes where and how it all works. What's the toughest part of the job?
Toughest part of the job. You know, there are different crises come along, you know, probably some of the priest issues we've had.
Sure.
The very public ones. Have been hard.
Yeah.
Have been hard. It breaks your heart for everybody, you know, for the priest that somehow went down the wrong path, you know, for those that were hurt. And then internally, you know, for the bishop, that's, you know, one of part of his flock, you know, who
yeah,
he
sure.
shepherds.
Absolutely.
And it's like a father with a son. So those have been the hardest moments.
I remember going to a workshop a few years ago. It was one of these crisis counselor type people, how to deal with the media. And having been in the media my whole life, I nodded as he was saying it. He says, make it a one-day story. Mm-hmm. Get it all out on day one and have a press count. Don't hide. Don't
right.
cover. Don't,
right.
you know. And I've noted that throughout the country, Bishop Soto just rises to the top in terms of this is what happened, and this is how we're dealing with it, and whatever the proper authorities have been informed. And any questions, you know, as opposed to no comment.
Right. No, he's very transparent, and I've really appreciated that.
Yeah.
You know, he puts it out there. This is what's going on, and this is what we've done. And it's the way to do it, in my opinion. So
it is. Indeed it is. What are the joys of the job?
Oh my gosh, I get to work. I get to come to work every day and work with the best group of people. Best group of people. Probably one of the highlights when I think back is, you know, I work day in and day out with Bishop right down the hall from me and see him constantly, but then I go to one of the big liturgies, the Chrism Mass, the deacon ordination, the priest ordination, and there I am sitting, and of course I get a primo spot, a front row spot, so that's a big blessing. But I will be sitting there, and the procession begins, and I look over, and I see Bishop Soto in all of his regalia, and it just sometimes takes my breath away. That's who I work for.
Yeah. I remember being at the Chrism Mass and seeing the procession the first time and just started crying.
Yeah.
All these people who have given their lives just in this one diocese. And it wasn't even all of them, because some of them couldn't make it. But most of them, you know, and it just seemed like it would never end.
Well, you remind me of another moment, too. It isn't a game, but it's been kind of fun. So the first was the Chrism Mass and seeing all these priests come down the aisle and trying to say, remember their names. Okay, I know that one. I know that one. And every year it's been more and more. And now they walk down and like, I know you all.
Yeah.
So that's been great, too.
Yeah. And you're right. And the Red Mass and then... I would think, even though you're not in charge of like St. Vincent de Paul and the Knights of Columbus and those groups, just knowing they're out there and knowing they're part of this great faith must make you really proud to be a Catholic.
It does. It really does. Looking back, I'm amazed that this is how God, Christ, decided he wanted the church to be run through humble men, you know, regular guys, through all their joys and sorrows, their strong suits and their weaknesses. The church has run for over 2,000 years, and it continues to do so. And you know the Holy Spirit is there making it all happen through them.
Indeed. I suspect there are a lot of people listening that don't realize how many different departments, ministries that the diocese encompasses. You know, we go to Mass on Sunday morning, and we've got various ministries at our parishes. Most of them manned by volunteers, but some of them with a staff person. But we don't realize. And you say the diocese. Okay, what does the diocese do? Here's the annual Catholic appeal. Here's this. The one campaign and these things, and we Talk a little bit about the vastness.
Sure.
I mean, we're in a two-story building and it's crowded.
Right.
You know, it's really crowded with all the different. I mean, we have a deaf ministry. We have, you know, Catholic Charities and Social Concerns, which has just got its hands in a million different pies, whether it's, you know, you think of Catholic Charities, oh, they're feeding people, or they're, you know, we're dealing with immigration issues. We're dealing with resettling people from Afghanistan. We're dealing with all kinds of issues. We have an AIDS ministry. We have on and on and on.
Right.
You have to be really multifaceted and really open-minded in terms of all the things, all the different people we encounter. And all of our ministries, with the exception of the priesthood, are open to everybody. We're not. You don't have to be Catholic. You don't have to be. We're here to help you.
We're here to serve people.
To serve people.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. You know, so this is kind of like the corporate headquarters.
Yeah.
Is what we, you know, kind of term ourselves as. And so we're here really to be a support system for our priests.
Right.
And the lay leaders in parishes. So whatever they need, there's someone to turn to that can give them some direction or advice based on probably more experience than they may have. So there's everything from lay personnel. So, you know, we live in California and there's labor laws and we have to be able to navigate through that.
Sure.
The Catholic school department running really a school system.
Sure.
They're individual schools, you know, owned by the parishes, but the administration of them and just really that kind of a school system requires a department to assist with that. The fundraising piece, you know, whether we're fundraising for something, one of Bishop's initiatives, or whether there's assistance helping a parish fund something larger that's needed. Vocations department, recruiting men and women for the priesthood and the religious life.
Right.
Just all the things that require not only the church being able to move forward and continue its good work, but all of the various ministries then that are outreach to people for wherever they are in life that's needed. Jail ministry, prison ministry, been another big initiative of Bishop Soto's.
Yeah, and you know, the thing that has always made me very proud to be Catholic is we don't separate our religion from the daily life, whether it's at the local level, whether it's the California Catholic Conference, whether it's the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. They take positions.
Yes.
On the issues of the day. They take very strong, you know, positions based on our faith, based on the Bible, based on the catechism, whatever it is. They talk to the legislatures, they talk to the Congress, they, you know, we don't endorse candidates and we shouldn't, but we take stands on issues of the day, wherever the chips may fall. We don't play any favorites. We don't say, well, this will upset the Republicans or this will upset the Democrats. We just, we don't fit in any political party, but this is our teaching.
That's right. It's really overriding principles that govern ourselves,
You
know, dignity of the human person, the common good,
exactly.
And then it's applying them to the, you know, situations of the day.
Right.
Yeah.
So is there an ideal candidate out there? Is there, did you have a checklist of who we're looking for?
Well, the probably the number one thing I would say is that they do need to be a practicing, faith-filled Catholic.
Being Catholic takes a lot of practice.
Daily practice. Oh my gosh, but you know, and we would say a Catholic in good standing. Mm-hmm. So in you know a regularized marriage and that kind of thing for this position, it's really required. And then the second piece is going to be proven skills in organizational management.
Right.
This is not a job that you would come in and learn. I mean, there's plenty to learn,
sure.
But you don't want to be working on some of the skills needed to do the job.
Yeah.
They need
to have been
finely honed and ready to go. Again, huge learning curve with just different things you would expect, but that piece needs to be visibly present.
But not necessarily somebody that's in the church.
Not necessarily.
Profession.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, they need to be familiar. And again, sure. I think being a practicing Catholic, most people have an idea of how the church is structured,
sure,
and works. But some of that can be taught.
Sure.
But the skill set, you can't. I guess you could teach it, but not at this level.
Yeah.
So the other thing is just you need to have the ability to be able to build relationships,
mm-hmm,
because so much of getting the work done is being able to build relationships with people, with our priests. They're essential,
right?
And with the laity, in order to when problems arise, you have those relationships in place to help sustain and get you through.
This is a vast diocese, 20 counties.
Mm-hmm.
We touch the Pacific Ocean, we touch Nevada, we touch Oregon. It's pretty remarkable. Does that present a unique challenge for a chancellor?
Not for me per se. No. In fact, I have to say, compared to some of the people that report to me, they do far more traveling than I do.
Mm-hmm.
I really, for the most part, stay in the home office, mm-hmm, so to speak, just to provide stability, because the bishop is the one that really does more of the traveling, where I stay put. So, I mean, the challenges come with serving people, not just in inner city, but in the rural areas. So there's different challenges for providing,
sure,
services and support. But for me per se, I'm not affected by the vastness of the diocese personally.
Does the bishop, you're fairly close there upstairs.
Mm-hmm.
Do you hear a Kathy? Does that ever happen?
No, he'd have to yell pretty loud, but my phone, I'll see it and his name will appear. Bishop Kathy, are you busy? Could you come on down here, please?
And yeah.
So it's more that, or I am doing work at my desk and my back face, when I'm at my computer,
sure,
my back faces the door, and all of a sudden, and I won't hear a noise, I feel and I turn around and he's standing there.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, the first couple times that really threw me for a loop, but anyway, he'll come down and see me, so.
Yeah, what, talk about working with Bishop Soto.
Oh my, I have such great admiration for him. He is a very pastoral bishop, but he also is very, when I say management minded, maybe people think that's a negative, but he takes the work we do seriously.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much to be done, and he feels responsible for that, and wants to make sure that everyone's doing what needs to be done to serve the people of God. He's a very honest person. When you make mistakes, he doesn't. I remember, I've probably told this story before. The first couple months, I was so nervous about making my first mistake, and you're going to make a mistake, right? It's going to happen, and so I made it. And I remember thinking, "Oh boy, I need to just fess up right away." So I walked in his office and said, "Bishop, I made a mistake," and he just looked me directly in the eyes, and I kept going, told him what was wrong, what I'd done, and he goes, "All right, and how are you going to fix it?"
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, and he said, "All right, go take care of it."
Wow.
And I walked out of there thinking, okay, and took care of it, and then it never,
No, that's it.
That was it.
It's done.
That was it. So he has quite a way of forgiving people,
mm-hmm,
their fault. I don't want to say their faults, but their mistakes. And even things that have been directed at him, he's able to let them go. He's a very faith-filled man that stays close to our Lord. And
he's been a tremendous inspiration to me. I'm always thrilled when we have him on the radio. And one thing that sticks with me, just recently, I was helping to announce the Collar Cup, the soccer game at Papa Murphy's Park out by Cal Expo, the professional soccer venue. And so at one point, Bishop Soto and I were on the field at the same time, and I interviewed him at halftime for the PA system, and just had, you know, just a kind of a lighthearted conversation. Who are you rooting for? You're rooting for the priests, you're rooting for the seminarians, and it's right in the middle of the World Cup. He says, I'm rooting for Mexico. Oh. You know, and everybody laughed and got a good chuckle out of it. But, and then after the game was over, and we weren't on the air anymore, he and I were just chatted for a minute. He said goodbye and went off to greet other people. Yep. And just after he left and was about 20 feet away, three of my children who had come to the game with me came down on the field so we could get together and go home, and came down on the field. And I noticed that Bishop Soto saw them.
Oh.
And he just immediately turned around, came back, and individually talked to each of my kids, you know, and just, I'm getting teary just talking about it. It was so clear that he loves children and is concerned about them and connecting with them. Not my children any more than anybody else's children, but just that, oh, here are some kids that came to this game. I'm going to go talk to them.
Yeah. He really recognizes that the future of our church lies with our children. And you brought up another point. He is so giving of himself, of his time. I mean, he just, the Bible verse about laying one's life down for one's friend, you know, a lot of times we think that you're thinking of, you know, dying for someone, putting yourself in front of a car, you know, I mean, or the martyr, you know, but for me, that's taken on a new meaning in watching his schedule and how he lives his life, that he literally gives his life as a gift to the Catholic faithful, probably to a fault. but I mean the pace he keeps. But I think it's just his belief that, you know, he's giving his life to us.
Very rarely have I been at a Catholic event where he's not there. In fact, the previous few weeks prior, the Sacramento Classic, the basketball game at Christian Brothers between the priests and the seminarians, he had a confirmation that night. I think at St. John Vianney in Rancho Cordova, and it probably wasn't starting until 6 or 7 o'clock in the evening, and the basketball game started at 7. But by golly, he didn't make it at 7, but he made it. You know, he could have said, okay, well, I did this today. I'm going to go home and put my feet up for a minute. Nope, he came straight over to the basketball game, and boy, was the crowd happy he came.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's just that. I mean, I think they need to teach by location at seminary.
Well, I think for a bishop, it is a necessary piece to be with the people a certain amount of time.
Right.
You know, it can be a very much of an administrative piece where you, if you weren't careful, you could get, you know, locked in your office a lot. So I think getting out and being with the people is what gives them life. So that's an important part. But he just, again, is very selfless with the gift of himself and his time.
Yeah, indeed. Well, he's been an inspiration to all of us, and as have you.
Yeah.
And we greatly appreciate your many years with the diocese and with the church, and everything you've done over the last 9 or 10 years with the as chancellor, and scd.org and at employment, and there'll be the full description there.
Yep.
And the job is wide open, but you want all applications by the end of the month.
Yeah, August 1 is the deadline, and there's a little bit of material to turn in, so it would be very hard to do it the day before. Well, I guess someone could, but pull an all-nighter, anyone that you know, someone that you think might be a good fit, we'd be very grateful for people just to pass it on. Yes.
Very good.
All righty.
Kathy, thanks so much.
Thank you.
We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with more on A Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and longstanding support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
Good morning. This is Sister Maria, and I'm the Formation Director for the Seminarians, and you are listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Sister Maria. Thanks for all you do for vocations. And we're pleased and honored now to have James Cavanaugh, the Director of the Office of Worship and Prayer, join us. Good morning.
Good to be with you again.
Good to be with you. You know, I had a very interesting experience. I always like to talk about my Mass experience with you because you can put it in context. It was Saturday before last. I was going to MC the Vocations Dinner, the annual Vocations Dinner. And they move it around. I love that they move it around. But it was all the way up, a very hot day. It was at St. Patrick's in Placerville.
Oh, how nice.
And so the knights are out there cooking tri-tip. In full regalia. And I was, one of my daughters accompanied me, and you kind of go up a little hill, and, you know, Placerville's kind of built on the hills. It's this unique, very charming town. And we finally found a place to park, and we decided we would go to the vigil mass. Their vigil mass is at 4 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
The earliest possible vigil mass you've taught me.
Right.
And yeah. And so we come in, and then the dinner is going to be at 5:30. So the knights are out cooking the tri-tip already for the dinner. And the roaster is, I mean, it's like within 10 feet of the church. And I'm not kidding you. It got smoky in the church.
And it wasn't the incense.
It was not incense. All you could smell was tri-tip.
Oh.
And tri-tip cooking is, wow. It's like... you know, I didn't know if people were hungering for the Eucharist or hungering for tri-tip.
So it was hard to keep your mind on the business.
Yeah, and many of the people, the parishioners, didn't know about the vocations dinner, even though a number of local people will come, but there a number of people involved in vocations from throughout the diocese come to that. So it wasn't a parish function.
Yeah,
and they got to be going, where is this new restaurant that just opened?
Yeah.
And then it got smoky enough that I looked up and there's all this row of automatic sprinklers. And I'm thinking, oh, man, those things are going to come on. We're going to get baptized.
Yeah.
Too.
Oh, boy. You know,
but it didn't happen. But it was, I've never had that experience. I've never smelled tri-tip cooking during Mass.
No, I cannot say that I have either.
Do I need to go to confession?
Well, you know, the idea of the insofar as you were distracted.
I was distracted.
Might not be a bad idea. But, you know, the danger of distraction is ever present.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, whether it's, an event like that where you smell this luscious barbecue just outside. Or whatever, you know, if we're honest with ourselves, every time we go to Mass, there's this element of distraction. We have
absolutely.
To keep forcing ourselves to come back to the task at hand. And, you know, as I was preparing for this segment, I was thinking about the a couple of different things. One is the, in the gifts of the Holy Spirit, it talks about the fear of the Lord, mm-hmm. and people kind of bristle a little bit at that idea, fear of the Lord. Well, you know, the fear of the Lord, if we go back to the Old Testament, is really related to the critical imperative to love the Lord. In the book of Deuteronomy, you know, there's the great Shema, which is, hear, O Israel, the Lord your God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. You know, now there's a reason why that's a commandment and why a pious Jew was required to recite the Shema several times a day. You know, once when they got up at least, and once before they went to bed, and other times during the day. Why is that? Is because of this tendency for us to be distracted by the things of the world. You know, we're incarnate beings. We have bodies with noses that smell wonderful things, or thoughts that go off in other directions, or ears that hear things that distract us, or our eyes that distract us. You know, so we have these senses, and on the one hand, the senses are critical for God to communicate himself to us through the things that he has made. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, those very same things that God created can also serve as a distraction, because God wants to draw us up ultimately to him. So the Shema, we're reminded, you know, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. And as I was thinking, you know, when I was raised as an Episcopalian, the service every Sunday started with the great commandment. I always like to test new confirmands. Can you tell me what the great commandment is? Mm-hmm. And sometimes they're not quite sure, you know. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and love your neighbor as yourself.
Period. Those are Jesus's own words.
Jesus's own words. And, you know, and growing up and hearing those words week after week after week, and that was how the service started. And of course, at that time, I had no idea. I didn't connect it to the Shema. You know, hear, O Israel, the Lord your God, the Lord is one. I didn't make that connection until much, much later in my life. But the benefit of that is that because I heard that week after week after week, now as an adult, you know, those words are seared into my brain. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just part of, in fact, you know, in that passage where he gives that command to love the Lord your God, it says, you shall teach them diligently to your children, and you shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise, and you shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as a frontlets between your eyes, and you shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. And so, you know, there was not only this like imperative to just recite it once or twice a day, but to really drill it into your children, mm-hmm. And make them memorize it. And, you know, that act of memorizing certain key verses, but particularly important verses like this,
right.
Are important because kids, little kids especially, they learn first and foremost by memorization.
Sure.
And then as they get older, they're able to abstract more fully and then to put those, what they've memorized, into practice. But, you know, as you know, that ability, Bob, you and I know, that the ability to remember things sort of diminishes as you get older.
Yes.
But when you're little, a little kid, you know, they just absorb things like a sponge. And they can remember things and memorize things really easily, a lot easier than
absolutely
a mature adult can. So, you know, I think it's important that when we're instructing kids, you know, in terms of catechesis in general, but for our purposes, you know, liturgically, is to instill in them these moral imperatives, but that are also have liturgical application,
mm-hmm.
like love the Lord your God with all your heart,
right.
soul, and mind.
Right.
Because unless you get that commandment sort of deep down in your soul, you know, that we are to love God, that then later on when Mass becomes challenging, when we become distracted by the tri-tip steaks that are barbecuing outside, right? We can come back to that,
yeah.
and you can think to yourself, boy, I can't wait to have that tri-tip. Mm-hmm. However, love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. And you can bring that back, and it helps get you back on track, helps you focus on what you're supposed to be doing.
So when somebody says to you, I hear that commandment, and I believe in Jesus, and I believe in God, and I believe in love. But love is one of those things you can't force. Or we're talking about love between a man and a woman.
Right.
You know, it's like, well, for whatever reason, yeah, a nice person and great qualities, and
it just happens,
it didn't happen for me, or it didn't happen for her,
right?
You know, and somebody says to you, so how do you love God? I mean, I like God, I mean, I'm thankful to God, but how do I love Him with my whole heart, my whole soul?
Yeah,
how do I achieve that? Is there a ladder? Can I work at it?
Well, you know, the monks they did describe the spiritual life as a ladder of ascent, and mm-hmm. it begins, first of all, he was mainly writing with respect to reading scripture, and you know, the first step in entering into communion with God, or what they called contemplation, started with a simple reading of scripture, just reading the words, and not really analyzing them too closely, but just reading the words. And then when you come across a word or a verse or a passage that strikes you and that maybe provokes a question or maybe even sort of is disturbing, then to stop and really think about that. And that thinking may require some research to understand that passage more fully. And then once you pass by, once you gain understanding, then you enter into a dialogue with God. You know, God, I don't know what you're trying to say here. You know, this passage is really perplexing, or this mm-hmm. passage is really disturbing. What are you trying to say here?
Mm-hmm.
And then to stop and listen to what the Lord might be saying to you. And then once you have achieved some measure of understanding through this dialogue with God, then you can stop and give thanks, and then just simply rest in His presence, be in His presence with a sense of sort of calm acceptance and peace, because God has given you this understanding, and that's what the monks referred to as the stage of contemplation. But it all started with this effort, you know, of just reading, just sitting down and reading.
Mm-hmm.
So in answer to your question, you know, how can you compel someone to love God or love anything? Well, you can't. They have to engage God first. And then once they engage God and begin entering into a dialogue with God, then they will come to love God.
Mm-hmm.
So coming to love God really starts, I think, with this moral imperative to act, to do something.
Mm-hmm.
Even before you feel like doing it or you have the feelings of affection. And I think that's a little bit what's behind this great Shema, you know, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. And it says, you shall teach them diligently to your children, and you shall talk of them when you sit in your house and when you walk by the way. So it's only by this kind of repetition
mm-hmm.
and talking about God on a regular basis that eventually a person comes to love God. And this is where I think good liturgy is such an important factor, because God is spiritual and infinite and beyond our understanding. He can only really convey Himself by means of the liturgy.
Mm-hmm.
And so if the liturgy is, you know, sloppy or careless or lazy, well, people are going to have a much more difficult time of encountering mm-hmm. God mm-hmm. In the Mass, in the Eucharist. And so that sense of solemnity and reverence, without being, you know, dour and, you know, down, but being serious and taking the Mass seriously, and especially just being reverent. And this is where, you know, it's so important for the priest to exhibit and to be the example of reverent worship. And when that sense of reverence is present, and reverence, you know, can be, in fact, sometimes is most evident when it's quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And so having that sense of reverence within the Mass helps a person come into contact with God. And then they hunger for it, or they thirst for it more, because they touch something beyond them.
Mm-hmm.
Your tri-tip story is so illustrative. I didn't think about it before, but it is, because you think about where did this just wonderful fragrance come from? Well, it came from outside. It came from beyond you.
Right.
But it drifted in
mm-hmm.
Without your doing anything about it.
The doors weren't even open. You know how smoke is. It gets under and through every little crack and crevice.
Yeah. And so it came to you from the outside. It came sort of, you didn't call for it.
No.
But once you had that, a little bit of a smell, that wonderful fragrant odor, it made you hungry.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And I think that's what the Bible's talking about when it says, fear the Lord your God, or when it says, hear, O Israel, listen. It's when people get that little taste of God or that little fragrance of God, it's attractive to them, and they're drawn to it, and they want more of it, and it's that desire. And I think that's the underlying point of to fear the Lord or to love the Lord your God, is to desire God above everything, because everything in this world is passing away.
Yeah,
you know, you and me, everything will eventually pass away. No matter how permanent it may seem to be, things in the material world are passing away. And it's only the things of God, the things of the Spirit, that are ultimately eternal, that last forever. And it's those things that we need to acquire a taste for. And where do we get that taste, that first taste, that first whiff of that wonderful fragrance of heaven? Well, no other place than at the Mass. Mm-hmm. And so it's so vitally important that the liturgy be done as beautifully as possible, again, with great, great reverence and dignity and solemnity, without being cheerless, but something that gives people that first little whiff of God. What is that I smell? Oh, that's so beautiful. I want some of that.
Maybe this, you know, I see a homily here, at least.
Yeah.
Maybe the church one day is going to incorporate, you know, this is part of, you know, you have to be barbecuing tri-tip outside of Mass.
Yeah.
You know, just to remind people of all the glory, you know, of all the gifts God has given us.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, too, that you mention that, because in one of the earliest liturgical exercises in Genesis, the story of Noah, after the 40 days and 40 nights that they were on the ocean, and they came to rest finally, and it says, this is in verse verse 20, chapter 8, it says, this is after the flood, it says, then Noah built an altar to the Lord, and he took every clean animal of every clean bird and offered burnt offerings on the altar. So a sacrificial offering,
right
to God, for having saved them. And here's the next line. And when the Lord smelled the pleasing odor, the Lord said in his heart, I will never again curse the ground because of man or the imagination.
Wow. There it is.
So there it is. So I think in the ancient times, you know, the people then, they said, wow, this really smells good.
Yeah.
God must love this.
Yeah. And so, and now we know he did.
That's right.
There had to be some tri-tip in that offering.
Had to be.
Indeed. Thanks so much. Mm-hmm. Always a pleasure. Underwriting for the Bishop's Hour is provided by Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services, a ministry of the Diocese of Sacramento. As a church-owned nonprofit founded in faith, Catholic Funeral and Cemetery Services is dedicated to providing education, support, and resources during life's most difficult moments. They will make every effort to enable you to realize your final wishes while empowering families to make completely informed decisions. You can give them a call. They are at 855-525-2285. That's 855-525-2285. We're also brought to you by a generous grant from Christine Cipperly, marriage and family therapist. If you're looking for help with family or personal problems, if you'd like help from someone with a Catholic point of view, someone who understands the importance of marriage and family and affirms the dignity of every human life, Christine Cipperly is a trained and experienced counselor of married couples, families, and individuals. She can work with you on your marriage, your parenting, or your individual struggles in a way that will not violate our faith. Christine is a wonderful, wonderful therapist. Give her a call. She's at 530-400-4757. That's 530-400-4757. We'd like to thank Christine Cipperly and Catholic Cemeteries and Funeral Services for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour. That's going to do it for us for today. Thanks for listening, everyone. God bless. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Greetings. This is Bishop Jaime Soto from the Diocese of Sacramento, inviting you to join Ministry Days 2018 in the footsteps of the beloved disciple. Join me on September 28th and 29th at St. Francis High School for the largest gathering of ministers, catechists, and Catholic school teachers in our diocese. This is an excellent opportunity to network with others who serve our parishes and schools and who are co-workers with Jesus in building up the kingdom in this part of the Lord's vineyard. You can find more information at ministrydays.com. Again, that's ministrydays.com. May God bless you as you walk in the footsteps of the beloved disciple following our Lord Jesus.